what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. Thegodwhospeaks.org. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Tuesday, December the 10th, 2024. Thanks for listening to AFR. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
Again, we thank you all for listening to AFR. And Fred, we got some news this morning. We got a lot of news to talk about. But first of all, is this story involving this New York murder? Yes.
Yeah, 24 hours ago, we were sitting here doing this show, and the news broke that police at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, had arrested a young man that they believed was the suspect in the shooting death of this CEO.
How did that happen? How did it all go down?
Well,
as far as him being found out.
Well, he was at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. This young man, his name is Luigi Nicholas Mangione, 26 years old.
What ethnicity is that?
Ask Ed.
Oh, man. Well, y'all just go ahead, because I knew when I heard this guy's name, I knew. I said to myself, you can expect it tomorrow.
Yeah. It's not Scottish.
Yeah.
But he was at a McDonald's, a kind of low-profile McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
As opposed to a high-profile.
Yes, high-profile.
Stop it, Tim.
Yeah.
Just stop it.
He got on a bus in New York, and I guess this is where he ended up, almost 300 miles from New York City where the murder took place. So he's sitting there, and there is another customer at that McDonald's who says, that guy looks like the pictures that we've seen of the suspect in the New York murder. He goes to a McDonald's employee who has
The customer does.
Yeah. He goes to a McDonald's employee. They call 911. The cops arrive. This young man, Mr. Mangione, is sitting there. He has a surgical mask on his face, but his other clothing looks like the clothing that we've seen in the pictures coming out of the New York murder. And they begin to question him. Among other things, they ask for ID. When he shows the ID, it is the same false ID that he showed at that hostel in New York. They start to put the two things together. He also had on his self this gun that was used. It's one of these guns that you create with a printer.
It's a 3D printer. It's called a ghost gun.
A ghost gun. So they put all of these things together. They start to go through his backpack. What they find, amongst other things in this backpack, is a note. And I want to read from the Associated Press, which is quoting the note that they found to the feds. I'm quoting now what was on the note. To the feds, I'll keep this short because I do respect what you do for our country. To save you a lengthy investigation, I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. It also had a line that said on this note, quote, I do apologize for any strife or traumas, but it had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming, end quote. So they've arrested him, obviously. He, later in the day yesterday, was charged with the murder of Mr. Thompson, that CEO of United Healthcare in New York. By the way, the Pennsylvania police also said they found him. He had a passport on him. He had $10,000 in cash, and $2,000 of that $10,000 was in foreign currency. Does that speak to a plan? The other thing, and we have this Associated Press on our website, AFN.net, is that this young man, well-educated, he was valedictorian at his elite Baltimore prep school. He earned an undergraduate and graduate degrees in computer science in 2020 from the University of Pennsylvania. He lived in Hawaii, and some of the people there have said that Mangione had a problem, a health problem with his back. He had a lot of pain in his back, and which kept him out of sports, et cetera, et cetera. Is this connected to a motive for going after Mr. Thompson? We don't know. He is still a suspect, officially. But pieces are starting to come together.
Yeah, I'm going to say, first of all, he comes from a wealthy family.
Uh-huh.
This is a well-educated, Ivy League education young man. And we do need to be careful to say he's the alleged murderer in what happened to this CEO. But let me just say this.
But didn't he say he acted alone?
He did.
Okay, that's an admittance. I understand what you're saying about alleged.
Yeah, I'm just crossing T's and dotting I's.
Right.
So let me say that this is going to sound shocking, but I'm going to explain what I mean by this. This young man is not a sociopath. No. He's not a psychopath. The reason I say that, I'm not a psychiatrist, but when the cops at McDonald's started questioning him, and they asked him, I think, just several questions, and the third one maybe was, were you in New York recently?
Yes.
And then this young man started shaking.
Yes.
Okay, so that tells me it's not a sociopath, someone who's ice cold, a murderer who doesn't flinch. Okay, so then I start to say, well, then what motivated his actions? And Fred, you and I were talking before the show began. I go back to the London terrorists, these young Muslim men, all came from wealthy backgrounds, and ideology does it.
Yeah.
Ideology radicalizes people and causes them to do these kinds of actions. And that's why I say they're not just sociopaths where they just hate all humanity. This young man, well-educated, I want to know, I don't know, maybe we'll never have answers to these questions, probably not right away. Did his education radicalize him? Is this where he got ideology that led him to think, I'm going to go take out one of these quote-unquote parasites?
Yeah.
This is not what, you know, people say, sometimes progressives will say, people commit crimes because they're poor, because they're disadvantaged, because they don't have opportunities. Well, I don't know. That's an argument for another day. But this guy didn't have none of that applied to him.
No.
He wasn't a psychopath. It has to boil down to some sort of ideological radicalization. And then the question is, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised a lot of this story that's, I guess that we'll know more about in the coming days, but I don't know where he intended to go. It doesn't sound like he had much of a plan beyond 4 or 5 days.
Well, the fact that he had $10,000 in cash on him and $2,000 in foreign currency, where they don't know what the currency was, I think his plan may have been to get out of the country eventually.
Yeah.
If he had $2,000 in foreign currency.
Yeah. But then.
But to your point, that's still not really a plan.
$2,000.
What are you going to do then?
That's what I'm saying. You're going to live. So you're going to where? I don't know. Coast.
You're going to eat fish tacos down in, you know,
right,
Belize.
For how long are you going to do that?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like to me he had much of a plan. If he's sitting in a McDonald's in Altoona.
You know, it just bothers me. This young man had all these advantages. Listen. You go to these kinds of schools and you get these kinds of degrees, then work to change the system, man.
Yeah.
Spend your life as a hero of those who think the healthcare system in this country needs to be changed. Make a living for yourself. Get married. Have kids. You're changing nothing by shooting some guy in the back.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Again, I probably won't know this for a while. We were talking about this before the program. How did he know this guy was staying at the Hilton? Was it the Hilton?
It wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Yeah. Well, of course, there are many Hilton hotels in New York City. I'm just saying at this particular hotel, uh-huh. How did this guy know that the CEO, Williams, right?
Brian Thompson.
Thompson, excuse me, Mr. Thompson, was staying there. How did he know what time he was going to come out? How did he know which exit? I mean, I guess, you know what I'm saying?
He clearly knew who the guy was. The video.
He knew who he was. Now, he could probably identify him by photograph. I mean, he's or maybe he had met him in person a time or two, some kind of situation. You know, like you said, Fred, if this guy was a shareholder.
That's a good point.
Maybe he was at a meeting where Mr. Thompson, the CEO, was previously. Uh-huh. But I want to know how he knew where he was staying. And maybe it was a guess, or maybe he saw him come into the hotel from a distance. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Those things. But then to wait and to lie in wait, as they say, waiting on him to come out. What if he came out at 10 in the morning? Maybe he
and the sidewalk is filled with people.
Yeah, because he was. Anyway, that's yet to be determined, but. When he says, this fellow says, I acted alone, he's going to have to explain how all those things he knew by himself, I guess I should say.
And with this manifesto that handwritten with which he was caught, I'm sure this guy's probably singing.
How do we know the manifesto so quick?
It was a handwritten note. I guess they found it.
It was an exact replica of the one he had posted online.
Okay, gotcha.
That's all. Okay. Somebody said it's a replica of the one that was posted online.
Okay, well, he's going to prison now. If not, I don't think they have the death penalty in New York, right?
I don't believe it.
I don't think so. So but he'll be he'll go to prison for a long, long, long time. He doesn't quite fit the profile of what you might expect, except that maybe there's some kind of a motivation here. Maybe he was denied some kind of claim, or he knows somebody who was and it angered him, or he just hates the insurance industry, health insurance industry, because he thinks generally they do people wrong. And so that's what makes any CEO of a company who does people wrong all the time by not
approving
claims.
Yep.
That makes him a parasite by who he worked for and what he does.
By the way, New York does not have the death penalty.
Right.
So that was ruled unconstitutional in 2004.
Right. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. So this fella, what's his name again?
Luigi
Mangione.
So he will be extradited to New York City probably today, I would think.
There's some question over who gets him. And so obviously I think New York City will, but I mean the feds have a claim here too. He crossed state lines. So wherever he
winds. You mean federal charges?
Yeah, federal charges. Probably I'm guessing it would be New York. But
Alvin Bragg will let him out this afternoon.
Oof. Man.
Don't you think?
No.
No.
Even Alvin Bragg won't do that.
If Alvin Bragg has jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Why? Well, when he, you don't think he does that all the time. Alvin Bragg does. He lets violent criminals go the day of.
He does. When they've been treated unjustly, Tim, as we all know that most killers have been treated unjustly.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's in Manhattan where he's a DA. I'm just saying. These big city DAs routinely turn people out who are violent criminals.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. But maybe he's so high profile that.
Alvin Bragg would. Yeah, he couldn't get away with that, just politically speaking.
I don't agree with you on that one. But anyway.
Okay.
I don't think he can get away with anything he wants to.
Maybe
they don't care in New York.
Shoot somebody on.
Yeah, they don't care. In New York, this guy's a flaming liberal. I mean, just a bleeding heart who lets everybody go, and they commit crimes all over Manhattan, and the people in Manhattan vote him again and again.
Yeah.
So I don't think they give a rip, sadly. But anyway, well, I say sadly. They think it's a good idea. in the name of social justice to let criminals from the streets free in Manhattan. All right, next to the next story, Fred.
Well, you've introduced the next story.
Yeah.
Alvin Bragg.
Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA.
All right. Well, we were sitting here yesterday. The story broke about the suspect in the New York shooting. Moments later, we were still talking about that when the news came across that the jury in New York looking into the Daniel Penny case found him not guilty of the lesser charge. Last Friday, the jury
Which was negligence.
Last Friday, the jury kept asking questions about the manslaughter charge, which was the initial charge against Daniel Penny. Again, he is the former Marine, young man. Back in March of last year, of 2023, he was on a subway in New York. There is this guy, last name Neely.
Jordan Neely.
Started acting crazy, threatening people, threw his jacket off, going to kill somebody, et cetera, et cetera. People were on that subway car, were very scared. Daniel Penny says, I have to do something to protect these people from the threats that are coming from this guy named Neely. Penny puts him in a chokehold. And Mr. Neely was alive when the police first arrived after someone called 911, but Mr. Neely died. Alvin Bragg, the prosecutor we're just talking about, charges Daniel Penny with manslaughter and with negligence. Jury could not come to an agreement on the manslaughter charge, so the prosecution and the judge said, okay, just dismiss that charge and go to the negligence charge. Well, the jury came back yesterday morning, Monday morning, after being off all weekend, and within, I think, 45 minutes or something like that, found him not guilty on the negligence charge. So, Mr. Penny, now there is a civil case going to be lodged against him by the family of Mr. Neely. But outside that courtroom yesterday in New York, there was a group, Black Lives Matter group, a lawyer for the Neely family, and I want you to have a listen to the Black Lives Matter representative, I'll put it that way, and see what he has to say in the way of reaction to Daniel Penny being found not guilty. Cut number two.
Just like everybody else seeks justice on their own, just like everybody else has vigilantes, we need some black vigilantes.
That's right.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud. How about we do the same when they attempt to oppress us?
Oh, me. That's just so tiresome.
The only good thing in that clip is I didn't hear a bunch of people applauding and saying.
So there's seven people there.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the vast majority of black people in New York understand that this is a race baiter, someone who hates.
They do.
And that what he's saying is not an accurate reflection of what happened on that subway,
right?
Which I guess is progress, because that's reprehensible behavior. Is that a lawyer?
No, there is a lawyer for the family.
Okay. That's just a representative, a BLM
correct.
Representative.
Correct.
Because if that was a lawyer, I would say I'd hope he is. I want to say defrocked, disbarred.
That's what you do to a priest,
to a
isn't
priest,
it?
Yes. Yeah. Disbarred, or otherwise sanctioned, if that's a lawyer. He's calling. He was saying, I shouldn't even waste breath on this guy. This is a guy, Satan has filled this man's heart that we just listened to, okay, biblically speaking, okay? He's saying people try to choke us and kill us when we're loud. He was loud. Nobody's trying to choke him.
And he wants vigilantism. Are there racially motivated crimes in America? Yes, there are. There always has been, and there always will be, because we got 340 million people who live here, and there's some bad apples amongst us. But Daniel Penny's was not. From everything you can tell, that's the reason he was found not guilty, right?
That's right.
Because And it was a multi-ethnic jury.
Yes.
People on the subway were of different ethnicities, black, white.
And guess what? Black people get afraid just like white people.
I know.
And there's somebody acting crazy.
This should have never. Yeah, this should have never have happened. Also, this, you know, Allison, my wife and I were talking. We were saying, well, this is why people don't help anybody in New York. Because this guy was, this Daniel Penny was just minding his own business, happened to be on the subway. This guy starts threatening people around him with violence, and he gets involved to stop him, and puts a chokehold on this guy. The guy, Jordan Neely, died. I don't know why. You know, what happened there? Was he drugged up or did... I don't know what happened.
He was still breathing when the police showed up.
He was?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Daniel Penny, you could say just needed to let the guy do whatever he wanted to the passengers and not get involved.
And once you...
Walk away.
Once you confront someone like that, because he did, he had him wrapped up, had him in a chokehold.
You can't let him go.
Because you can't let him go. Listen, folks... I subdue criminals all the time. I usually do it at night while my community is asleep, and I patrol the streets and subdue criminals. Okay.
So you want a vigilante? Here's your guy right here.
You don't halfway subdue somebody.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
You either go all in or you just sit there and you risk whatever's going to happen. And that's why, Tim, like you said, Daniel Penny is not a bad apple. In the Big
Apple. He has no history of having any trouble with the law or anything. So anyway, but he was found not guilty, so it's over, right? Except for the civil case.
The civil case.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if Alvin Bragg could bring other charges against him. I don't think that will happen, but you've got a lot of people talking. One of them, New York City Councilwoman Vicky Palladino, had this to say about the verdict and also the reaction by some in the Black Lives Matter movement. Cut number three.
The man speaking, listen, look how many people were around him. What do you have, 5? 10? BLM, in my opinion, is just about washed up. Their message is done.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, this election with Trump showed us, and us as New Yorkers, I was born and raised here, you know, this racism that they've tried to promote and did through 2020 when de Blasio was mayor and they all rose up. This is now dying because people are really starting to see right from wrong. Yeah. And this jury made it very, very clear. But Alvin Bragg is on a mission, as was that ADA who was despicable. How many times did they try to make this into a race issue by referring to Daniel in the courtroom as a white man?
No.
This is not a white or a black issue. Not at all. This was a right and a wrong issue. Yeah.
And this guy, Jordan Neely, the one who died, well, I'm sorry he's dead. Okay? We should all, I mean, but he had 42 prior arrests. The guy had mental illness.
Good grief.
Mental illness. I am sympathetic to the people who are saying that these big cities are failing the homeless because some of them are homeless because they're mentally ill. Some are homeless because of substance abuse or because they don't want to work or whatever. But there is a percentage that is mentally ill, and nobody wants – you don't want them in your house. You have kids. If you don't have kids, if someone's mentally ill, you get them out. So I'm sympathetic to the cry that these big cities need to do something with mentally ill people because they can become very violent, all right?
Yeah, but what can you do?
But that's not Daniel Penny's fault.
No.
And that's, you can't expect the people on that subway just to sit there and take it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry Jordan Neely's dead. His parents didn't apparently want him living with them. But now they're going to try to cash in on the fact that he's gone. So.
All right. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. And much more to talk about when we get back from this time out.
Thank you.
we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. And now, through a match, your gift is doubled. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Fred, thank you for listening to AFR. And I just want to clarify something I had mentioned. We were talking about the fellow who was arrested in Altoona, Pennsylvania. His name is
Luigi Mangione.
Yes, he was arrested for the murder of the United Healthcare CEO. You know, that's been in the news so much the last week or so, how long it's been, a week. I said that I thought he would be released by Alvin Bragg, the MA, the district attorney in Manhattan. First of all, just to clarify, I don't even know if this case took place in Manhattan or not. I don't know where it took place, where the shooting took place. So I don't even know if it's his jurisdiction. And I didn't mean to say that he would let the shooter go scot-free. I don't think that the charges have been already filed. So what I meant to say was that a lot of these big city district attorneys are big social justice advocates. So they don't believe in holding people, even violent criminals. They turn them out on the street all the time with no cash bail. So you'll have a violent criminal come into the Manhattan District Attorney's office. Well, it wouldn't be his office. I guess it'd be the criminal justice building or whatever, and be arraigned and then be told, come back for your trial in 6 months. But they're not. What I'm saying is they're not held.
Yeah,
they're often not held.
Because sometimes bail is. And the back and forth between prosecutors and a defense attorney, the back and forth is over how much bail, and are they a risk to flee or a risk to the public? And so sometimes they're kept in jail until their trial if they're, suspected of being a real danger to other people.
But I do believe that the majority of people in the big cities – and certainly New York's the biggest in America, within the city, not the suburbs now, within the city of New York, within the city of Chicago, within the city of Los Angeles, for example, in the city of San Francisco, the people that elect these far-left district attorneys agree with the far-left district attorney's philosophy. That's why they vote them back in and again and again and again. You say, well, that seems self-destructive. Why do you want violent criminals roaming your streets and you don't care that they're locked up? No, I would say the majority, not all, of voters in those deep blue places like Manhattan, they agree with the social justice movement more than they agree with putting criminals, violent criminals, taking violent criminals off the streets. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the only explanation you can have, because you see people say, well, good night. This is the guy's 40th arrest, and he's still on the street? Yeah, because they don't believe in arresting and prosecuting and imprisoning people in these big cities. You might say, well, that's nuts. I agree. Yeah. I agree it's nuts. But this is the way they want to live. This is the way that people in these big cities want to live. They want to live. And they wouldn't say, I'm for violent crime.
Right.
They wouldn't raise their hands and say, hey, bring me more violent crime. But they would raise their hands and say, I'm for not putting these people behind bars. I'm for letting them roam the streets before we put them behind bars, because I believe in social justice. And they probably had a hard life, or they were disadvantaged, or they never had a dad,
if you give them a chance,
yeah,
they'll make.
Or some people say they're only arrested because their skin color is different, and so there's all kind of reasons why people are left wingers when it comes to crime and social justice. But if you want to wonder, if you want to ask the question, why do these big cities keep have people that commit violent crimes over and over and over and over again, and they never seem to be punished for it, it's because the citizens who live there don't want them punished. Uh-huh. Because the citizens that live there continue to vote for district attorneys who let them out of prison.
Yep.
And they continue to win elections, like Alvin Bragg. Does that make
I
know that for a lot of people that sounds like, that doesn't make any sense. That goes against the self-preservation, doesn't it?
Right.
Yes,
well,
it does.
I'll just add this one other thing, that I agree with all that you said in explaining their mentality, of these social justice liberals who
are voters in those places.
I would also say that I think a lot of those social justice voters who are not living in the hood, quote unquote, they don't think it's ever going to happen to them anyway.
That's true.
And when it does, when they get carjacked, they're outraged.
Right.
Okay, because they never expected it to come to their neighborhood.
Where was it the other day? I was reading a story about it. One of these defund the police social influencers who had a lot of people following. I think she had moved from Texas to San Francisco or something, or was moving. Anyway, she was a big advocate in the Bay Area for defund the police. Well, she had a U-Haul, and she was moving from one place to another, and somebody stole her U-Haul and took off with it. And then she went on social media saying, where are the police? They won't come help me. They don't care.
Darcy Bell.
You saw that too?
Yeah, I did see it. I looked it up to get the name.
So Darcy's the one?
Yeah, anti-cop activist begs cops for help when everything she owns is stolen in San Francisco.
She said
the cops didn't do, she didn't put it this way, but they didn't do anything.
Yeah, I'm not laughing because she got her her.
Right.
By the way, it's pretty bold to steal the U-Haul.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you all.
I've heard in San Francisco, you don't leave anything in a vehicle, because there was some kind of new, maybe local news or whatever. They had a van with camera equipment. They were covering a story.
Oh, yeah. They were foreign.
Yeah.
A foreign news agency. They were.
They had everything.
Well, in some of these big cities, the people who park downtown leave their windows down and their hatch open on the back of their car.
Yeah.
You seen this?
Yes.
Because they don't
want the windows broken.
Yeah, just take what you want.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything. They usually don't leave anything in there, but don't break my windows.
Yeah.
But they plan for their windows to be broke if they.
Because that's expensive to get repaired, so they basically.
Yeah, go ahead.
But remember San Francisco, remember they passed this policy that you could steal up to $900?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you imagine? Somebody walks into a Walgreens.
Yeah.
Which are pretty well all shut.
They do this. Yeah.
They and
Walgreens are shutting down all
and
over.
They're running through the self-checkout. Oh, okay. Beep, beep.
Yeah.
Right up until they get to 900.
Yeah.
And then they walk out with the shopping cart.
Yeah.
Who
would have seen that coming?
Yeah.
Well, anybody who understands human nature.
So the defund the police lady wants to know where the cops are.
Yeah.
When her U-Haul is stolen with everything she owns in there.
Well, yeah, the one who was supposed to help you, ma'am, lost his job because
you were for defund the police.
Yeah.
You idiot.
They've been defunded.
Have a nice day, ma'am.
That is, okay. You you can decide whether she's an idiot or not. I just sort of blurted that out there.
She reaps what she sows.
I've decided. I've already decided.
You've rendered that verdict?
I've rendered that verdict. Listen, I'll just say this one other thing. We've got a guest. We really do got to get to him. But it's like these people who say, I'm going to go live with the grizzlies.
Right.
And then they get eaten.
Their note was, and then they leave a note saying, help me.
Yeah. Huh? And because they're always warned, you don't live with wild animals. And
I know.
And I just go, well,
I know.
If you should have seen that coming.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. Well, every couple of months or so, we have with us Dr. Walter Wendler, who is the president of West Texas A&M University. And he joins us now via the phone. Dr. Wendler, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Tim and gentlemen.
I like that, Dr. Wendler. You don't have to call Fred a gentleman. He's from Canada. So.
That's what we do here, Dr. Wendler. We hurl insults based on country origin and ethnicity. You heard what we were talking about there. We were also going to ask you, Dr. Wendler, by the way, just tell about your school, and then we want to jump into some topics here to cover with you.
Sure. West Texas A&M University, it's the northernmost university in the state. It's up in the Texas Panhandle. It's near Amarillo, just 15 miles south of Amarillo. It is the most conservative public university in the state of Texas, according to the presidential voting records in the 21st century, starting in 2004 up until this last month's election. We are the most conservative. We consistently vote more conservatively than any other area that's home to a public university based on county voting records.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of it.
Oh, you're proud of it.
I am proud of it.
Okay.
I am proud of it.
And we're proud. We're proud for West Texas A&M University.
I'm just surprised you hadn't been kicked out of the university system there.
Well, they did try. They took a no confidence vote in me, but the Board of Regents and my boss, I don't know what they did with it. It happened, gosh, almost a year ago. But there's been, maybe there was no confidence in the no confidence vote. I don't know. I haven't talked much about it. But at any rate, so it's not, it's a bit of a struggle at times.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's, I feel like we're doing the right thing here, and I am proud of it. I think we do a good job.
Talk about, we had you on the topic I wanted to discuss. In light of the presidential election where Mr. Trump was voted in over the far left candidate, and generally across the country, there's a more conservative vote this time. Do you think there's going to be a pullback on the part of these far left protesters on college campuses, namely the ones who were promoting Hamas and against Israel and the anti-Semitism that we saw on display, you know, a few months ago? How do you think that's going to affect the election is going to affect those kinds of left-wing protesters?
Well, you know, the protesters and the programs that support the protesters seen to support the protesters. I think of these as DEI initiatives, and I really DEI initiatives are counter to the purpose of a real university. And in Texas, Governor Abbott signed into law actually 2 years ago, Senate Bill 17, and they eliminated the DEI offices at all Texas universities. So Texas, by and large, is the lead in the pack. And what I think about when I think about this, the fact of the matter is a university degree has one person's name on it. It doesn't have a group or an ideology, but an individual. And it's not given. It is earned through effort and attained results. It's not entered into through membership. And I think part of what has gone on university campuses is they have placed group membership in front of individual attainment. And, you know, I find that's completely, in my mind, unacceptable. These should be merit-based environments. And, you know, by the way, a lot of institutions are backing away from the DEI offices now. Harvard Business Review, not long ago, a few months ago, published a piece on why these initiatives are failing and they're not producing the desired results. And people have lost, I think, have lost confidence in these kinds of initiatives to have any serious impact. It's mostly optics. And optics and checkboxes and all that kind of thing, they don't make a university effective. They make it appear a particular way. But the fact of the matter is, I think at West Texas A&M University and at many other universities in the state of Texas, because of Governor Abbott's signing into law this bill that basically did away with DEI offices and DEI spending on university campuses. I think we're way ahead of the pack.
Yeah, that was on that issue. That was kind of like one of the first blows that has to be struck. By the way, folks, you're listening to the voice of Dr. Walter Wendler, who is president of West Texas A&M University. He's a friend of American Family Radio and is on this program, Today's Issues, every couple of months. We like to discuss some of the things happening in education, and Dr. Wendler has spent many years in that field, so we try to get a perspective of what's happening around the country with Dr. Wendler. So, Dr. Wendler, there's an old joke that goes something like this. What do you call 3,000 lawyers on the bottom of the Pacific Ocean? And the answer is it's a good start. Okay, now.
Wow.
I have personal friends who are attorneys. It's just a joke. Okay, it's like blonde
jokes.
What's
in the heart, Ed?
That gets
what's in your heart.
but Dr. Wendler, the point I'm trying to make is when people say that, I hope it's good-natured fun. But you know what? Striking at DEI, that's a good start. But the public education, not just public education, in fact, some of our problems have been led by private schools in higher education. The rot, the moral rot, the intellectual rot, the anti-Americanism, the pro-Marxist ideology that has been taught, this has gone on for decades. And so it seems to me that what you guys are doing at West Texas A&M University, what Governor Abbott started in Texas, that's a good start. How diligent do people still need to remain? Let's say in Texas, okay, maybe people in Texas are going, bada boom, bada bing. You know, Governor Abbott, you know, launched the first, you know, missiles in this fight. Now we can kick back. This fight's far from over, isn't it?
Oh, you couldn't be. You're spot on. It's a continual struggle. Between what is, in my mind, between what is morally and ethically correct and what the tendency of all of us, basically as broken individuals, of all of us, and we have to constantly battle that, at least I do, every day. And I recognize that our organization has to do that, too. And one of the things that bothers me that on university campuses, you know, there's a lot of these institutions, and the privates were first among them, and they've stopped doing it. Harvard, MIT, Michigan, of course, is public, but dozens of other institutions have stopped requiring what I see as a loyalty oath in the form of DEI statements from faculty applicants. And that's according to Forbes this past summer. They would ask faculty to tell as part of the application process, what their DEI perspectives were.
Wow.
And the faculty that wanted jobs at these institutions, they knew the right answer. They knew what they were supposed to say. And the ones that would say the wrong thing, they would not get anywhere else. Well, these institutions have stopped doing that. And I think, it was Ed, I think, that said this. I think that the idea that we should require that kind of stuff is the foundation on which moral rot is built. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. We want people who can think clearly, and I'll say critically, not in the sense like sometimes we use that word, but think and analyze ideas and say, look, this is not right. We shouldn't have to ask somebody what they think about something like this and basically sign an oath, which is what I see that as a loyalty oath. And universities were very much against that. Fact is, I wouldn't necessarily think it's a good idea, but I would, you know, it is what it is. But I think these institutions have seen the light, just like much of corporate America. You guys know how many corporations have recently pulled back, done exactly what Governor Abbott has done in higher education here in Texas. But how many private enterprises have pulled back from these DEI efforts that don't yield any results? As a matter of fact, what they do is they breed distrust and undermine a organizational culture and so on, where people work together as individuals to meet common goals and common needs. And, you know, I personally believe that's very important, and we need to recognize and appreciate it. I tell people all the time, at WT, we try to live by the golden rule. I try to treat people every day the way I want to be treated. I'm not successful at it. But that law of reciprocity, and that, by the way, is present in pretty much every organized religion on the face of the earth. If you want to be treated decently, treat people with decency and respect. And I don't know, but, you know, I've had people tell me, this isn't a Southern Baptist Sunday school class. This is a public university. Well, why in the world should I even have to say that? I mean, why should I have to say that we need to treat people with decency and respect? Yeah. We're supposed to be educated and civic-minded.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm on a bit of a rant.
That's okay. It's okay.
Oh, you are.
I'm going to have to apologize to the lawyers in our audience as soon as you, as we're done. But go ahead and rant.
By the way, I have my son and daughter-in-law both graduated from law school at Regent University. So,
I'll start with them. My apologies.
All right. Dr. Walter Wendler, WENDLER, president of West Texas A&M University, has been with us. Again, what's the website for the school, Dr. Wendler?
The website is WTAMU.edu. And if your readers want to look at, I mean, if your listeners want to look at something very interesting, we've started an institute on the campus. It's called the Hill Institute. And the next time I'm on, I'm going to talk to you about the board leadership of this institute. And it is going to, you're going to say, my gosh, that is an amazing board for a little university up in West Texas.
We'll do it. Thank you, Dr. Wendler. Take care. Appreciate you being on with us.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. You all have a good day and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to you.
By the way, somebody sent me a book about 2 months ago, I guess it was, and it was a book about lawyers, and it said
like lawyer jokes or
lawyer jokes. The whole thing was lawyer jokes. It would say something about tales about lawyers and other reptiles. That was the title of the book. Tales of Lawyers and Other Reptiles.
Yeah, nobody likes a lawyer until you need one.
Yeah.
Same thing with police officers.
Yeah.
You know, in some of these big cities, they don't like police officers until someone's trying to break into your house at 2 a.m. So, folks, I hope you all understood. We have lawyers that work here with us.
Yeah.
I know personally lawyers. Had one in my Sunday school class, I guess until I insulted him and he went somewhere else. But
I have Brother Abe on speed dial.
Abraham. Well, listen, I like you, Ed. I know three lawyers with integrity, and you know they are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're out there.
Oh yes,
you've got.
Are you going to say six or don't?
You do have to search them out.
You do have to
search them out
through the bottom feeders.
They're there.
We're kidding, folks.
We're digging worse.
We're kidding.
I don't think you got any lawyers listening to this show.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, whatever few might have been listening.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And I said something about blonde jokes, and there was a little voice in my head that said,
right, don't do it.
You better back off.
Yeah.
You're going right off the cliff. My wife's blonde.
That's right.
Yeah,
so are half the ladies on the second floor of this building.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Huh? And this coming from an Italian. Okay, so
right.
Plenty of Italian jokes.
Right, right. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family
you
Radio.
Hear one?
Italian joke?
You
yeah, give me an Italian joke.
What does the tire on an Italian car, what sound does it make when it goes flat?
What?
They go wop, wop, wop. That's pretty lowbrow, I'll admit.
That's one of those, that's a JJ. That's almost down there with JJ's corn.
Yeah, it's pretty corny. Yeah.
Popcorn.
Yeah.
The popcorn jokes. Anyway, wop, wop, wop.
Dago, wop, wop,
Dago.
Because Dago and wop were both insults growing up.
Oh.
Being called a Dago. And a wop, that actually was, my understanding, was an insult term given to Italians when there was one of the great migrations from Europe and Italians were coming over and they didn't have papers. And they just wrote or stamped without papers.
Oh, that's what WAP means?
That's what I've heard. That's what WAP meant.
I thought it meant white Anglo-Protestant.
No.
Italians.
White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, that's a WASP.
A WASP, yeah, a WASP.
My understanding was that's what WAP meant.
WAP meant, okay.
And then they just called them WAPs.
Dago? Does that mean there goes?
Dago, no, I'm Dago? Not sure what Dago means. Right. What the origin of it is. You want me to look that up, Tim?
Sure, look it up. Look it up. All right.
It's Italian Day.
Yes.
Yeah.
For
we'll
bad
be back,
reasons.
We'll be back in 5 minutes with more jokes, more ethnic jokes of all kinds coming your way in 5 more minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.